Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. On a Skype call, I talked to Bibi Calderaro, an Argentinian artist and forest therapist living in Brooklyn, USA, who's recently devised a number of sensory walks on behalf of the US National Park Service. She explains her own practice and how it has evolved, and what are the key elements that she includes in her sensory walks that tackle the urban maladies of stress and anxiety. Such has been the demand for her walks, she's been recommissioned to devise more. Our conversation also explores Shinrin Yoku, the Japanese healing practice of forest bathing that, as an accredited forest therapist, Bibi has been incorporating in her practice.
There are two or three things which I think would be interesting to explore. One is to explore the fact that you're artists in residence involved in with the National Park Service. You describe yourself as a forest therapist?
Yes.
And thirdly, to talk about your walking practice, because you're not just a walking artist, you've been an artist in quite a lot of different media. Is it that you've taken up walking recently, or have you been using walking in your practice anyway?
Well, that's a tricky question, or maybe like an answer that won't be very straightforward, because I've always walked, always. I mean, not just like any regular pedestrian, of course, but what I'm saying is that I've always seemed to have included walking in some kind of understanding of my art and a thinking process kind of thing as an embodied medium of sorts, but I had not recognized it until I did a residency a few years ago that was particularly about walking. And so I went there sort of like, I don't know what this is all about. And then I found out that I had been that all along.
Oh, well, tell us about the residency. Where was that?
That was in Puerto Rico, 2013. It was like an immersion in Puerto Rico. We walked pretty much all of the north, east, and then southeast off the island, and then went off to Vieques as well. It was mostly all walking in the island. It meant a lot to me in the sense of being able to recognize a part of my practice that I had not seen before. And so from that day on, I immediately took up walking, kind of like a foundational part of my practice. At that time also, I had been doing a lot of performative actions that had to do with embodiment. So I was already in that track of moving away from more like materially present representation, you know, kind of practice to more embodied performative practice. So it just really helped me to do that kind of like leap transition.
And what was your journey that you've taken to get to the point that you were doing performative actions or interventions? So were you trained as a dancer or?
I've always danced, but never professionally. So I don't know that I can say that I am trained as a dancer. Since I was a teenager, I took dancing classes. I did walking, a lot of being out in nature, a lot of embodied things in a way. And so I always wanted to put them together, and as an artist, I've always felt a little bit frustrated about the fact that we're so oriented to doing art as this very material-producing act that sort of like separates the body. It's very thoughtful, conceptual kind of practice, so it's far from the body. And so I just wanted to have more of an embodied practice in a way that could bring an audience into understanding, you know, thought processes being embodied as well.
Have you always lived in the States, or have you lived elsewhere and practiced elsewhere?
Yeah, I grew up in Argentina, in Mexico first, and then in Argentina. My family is from Argentina. And then I came to the States a couple of times. One was for college, and then I went back to Argentina, and then I came back 20 years ago. And I've been here in Brooklyn ever since. My art practice started when I was in college. Yeah, so I've practiced as an artist in different places, in Argentina and mostly in the States.
Okay, I mean, the States is one of those places which, from our side of the pond, we look into the States and we see a place where walking in cities is pretty much frowned upon, apart from in New York. And there's a lot of sort of leisure walking or hiking and trails in the countryside. Have you found that you're working in sort of liminal spaces or the spaces in between? Or do you find that people are happy to be involved in walking interventions which take place in, you know, in Manhattan or in Brooklyn, where you're based now?
Well, I think there is a tradition of walking here that is, yeah, as you say, is mostly either the more the urban kind of walking or the more naturalist or more like the hiking type that is more. I don't know that that's taken as an artistic practice. You know, the hiking is like a different. Well, kind of understanding of what walking.
Or you have been an artist in residence, or you are an artist in residence for the National Park Service. Can you explain how that's happened and what does that entail?
Basically, a few years ago, I was doing these sensorial walks that have to do, again, with embodiment, understanding that we're not just visual animals, but that we have other senses, and so how to activate those other senses. And I was giving these walks particularly in a museum that is up in Boston that has this fantastic setup, which is it's built on the idea of a Venetian palace. So it has a beautiful courtyard with plants. So the nature is totally integrated in the idea of the museum. And then it has a wonderful garden, and the museum itself is placed within a park. It's inside and in the closer garden, and then a larger field that is a park. And there I met this person who works for the national parks and who loved my walks and the way that I integrated these liminal spaces in particular. And so he invited me to do a set of three walks in the parks that I did. That was 2015. And after that, he made a proposal for a grant that they have available, and he was able to procure that grant to call me to do six more walks, which I'm doing. They're starting in June this year and probably go through November. The first instance was an artist in residence that was like a short period. It was like three walks in the period of 3 months, and now it's six walks in the period of 6 months.
Because the National Park Service have property all over the States. Whereabouts are you working? Is it just in Boston and Massachusetts or elsewhere?
This is the branch of the National Parks that is, I believe it's more like New England, so that covers like five states in the northeast of the States. Their function, it's not just the property that they hold, like the big national parks that are famous all around, but they also manage different, I think, state and national land that is like other kinds of parks. So in the Northeast, it's more that kind of park. It's more like state parks and systems of trails that they manage through different state organizations. Basically, what they've asked me is to conduct these walks in a system of trails that is called the New England Trail that runs from the ocean in Connecticut up north to Vermont.
That's a huge distance. So tell us how long each of your sensory walks would be in terms of time and distance.
Because they're not about endurance, really. It's not about, you know, I wish I could do more of a, like a overnight kind of thing, but at this point I'm only doing them, it's like 3 to 4 hour experiences where I take people out in these trails and I choose a particular portion of the trail and then I, you know, conduct these sensorial walks over there and then we're back to wherever the people live. It's not like we're going to be immersed in nature for several days. No, I haven't gotten to that part of it yet.
Are you choosing the locations or are you being recommended locations by the Park Service?
No, I'm choosing the locations based upon the different set of elements that they offer. Like usually I like something that has a forest, but also maybe like a meadow and also some kind of water element. So different elements that I can combine in the sensorial walks. I ask for advice because obviously I don't know that trail, you know, by heart, by any means. And so I ask either people from the national park or whichever state organization manages them, you know, I give them my wish list and then they tell me, oh, this is a good portion where you can go. And it also has to be kind of accessible to the people that will come. So it has to have like a parking lot, you know, not be too far away from main access or whatever city or town they're coming from. So it has to have like a set of properties that works best.
What sort of age group and do you have coming on the walks?
It's mostly adults, I would say. This time around, though, I am catering the walks through different organizations that are already working with a specific population, and one of these organizations is a teenage organization that works with inner city kids. So that will be a particular teenage group. Then I'm also catering to another organization that works with first-time inner city mothers. So I'm hoping that that will bring, it's probably going to be young mothers, I don't know their ages, but along with their infant babies. So I want to make that connection, mothers and babies and nature.
If we were able to come on one of your walks, what might happen on it?
So I do different exercises that I guess they aim at expanding people's perceptions of themselves and of landscape or the environment. And so they're mainly about not just privileging vision, but, you know, like, so starting to be aware of your hearing and sound and your sense of touch and skin and air and everything that surrounds it. So it's different exercises, and then there's exercises that promote trust amongst participants. So in those exercises, it's sort of like expanding your sense of who you are in that particular environment that you might not feel too comfortable with, but that you can still trust, that you can, you know, accomplish a walk.
Yeah,
there.
In doing the walks yourself and leading them, what's been the most surprising thing that you've discovered?
That people are so much in need of this kind of thing. It's always surprising me because I come there thinking, oh, it's going to be another walk. And to me, it sounds kind of like familiar. And then when the walk ends, it's like, for example, sometimes here in New York, I've conducted walks that where people arrive and they're like very on the edge, you know, like anxious or, and they don't, they're just like their typical selves, you know, it's New York, people have a ton of things to do, we're always behind, always stressed. And then by the end, that, you know, like 3 hours of doing this, they are like a totally different person almost, like more welcoming, more engaged, more grounded. You can just sense it by the way they say hello to you in the beginning and then the way they say goodbye to you at the end.
Well, that's a good way of measuring it.
Right?
Well, yeah. Okay, so another thing that I read about you was that you're a forest therapist. So tell us, how does one become an accredited forest therapist, and what does that actually mean?
Okay, so I've been thinking about what this walking means and what it does and why it does it and blah, blah, blah. So in one of my incursions, and why for me it's so important to have the second part of my walks is that they happen in somewhat of a natural space. I don't conduct just walks in the city streets. That to me, it doesn't work the same way. So I was trying to figure out why, and, you know, I do know that I love being, you know, in natural spaces, and I love trees and all of this. So I was, like, doing, you know, the typical thing online where you're, like, surfing and going from one thing to the other, and all of a sudden I found this practice that comes from Japan and Korea that is called forest bathing. In Japanese, it's called Shinrin-yoku. And I just loved the idea. And so I started researching and seeing if there's anybody in the States who does it. And I found this guy who has an organization, basically, in California. And he gives training sessions of what this is about. And so I, you know, after a year or so, I decided that I wanted to take one of these training sessions because it was important for me to see how he formatted it and also what it implies and what things he leaves out or brings into his practice. And so I just went and did it. It's a week long, and basically you do these exercises, and it's, again, about sort of like bringing people out into these liminal spaces that are more hybrid between urban and natural spaces. And how do you bring them is important. So that's the whole methodology of it, is like, how do you bring them? How do you ease them in and then ease them out again?
I'm intrigued because
it was a great experience
working on developing walks and what I call workshops for something called London Tree Week. And I've been sent a spreadsheet of all the different other people who are contributing events, and there's someone providing forest bathing. So I thought, there's something opportune. I can find out a bit more about it. So would you like to just tell us a little bit more about what forest bathing is?
The Asian practice is actually coming from this health research that is happening because Japanese and Korean doctors in particular are prescribing their patients to go and have like a two-hour walk in a forest daily as a beneficial practice. First, they recognize the fact that people, their stress and their depression and, you know, whatever our urban maladies are, lowered with forest walking. And so they started researching and trying to find out why that happens. And, of course, you know science. They always find answers to their questions. And they found that there's a lot of sort of like micro materials that trees in particular emanate and that we benefit from them. So basically the Asian practice is based on that, on how and why we benefit from being immersed in forests.
What wisdom have you learned through developing your walking practice?
So I guess mainly my crucial point when I adopted walking as like my main medium of practice was that I guess I sensed, you know, it comes from trying to figure out what the huge issues with sustainability and how we relate to nature in particular, and how we are obsessed with dualities that are not necessarily there. So I started pushing my walking practice towards trying to find out ways of how to overcome those dualities and how to have walkers, including me, sort of like perceive the environment as part of ourselves. or vice versa, perceive ourselves as part of the environment, and how to push that into expanding those boundaries, like a threshold that we need to cross in a way. My project as a walking artist, I call it walking as ontological shifter, because I think that there's that sense that we need to overcome some concepts and some embodied ways of understanding who we are in deep ways. So that's one thing. And the other thing that I try to do is sort of like decenter the human in a way that makes us understand that we are part of a whole and not just everything is for the human and for the human benefit and for human to profit. Those are like my main columns of a walking artist.
Can you recommend a couple of walks?
My recommendation would be to go and walk in the closest natural space that you can find near where you live. And by this, I mean, if your means only allow you to go to your garden, you can walk there as well. Just try to be as alert as possible to what biodiversity and bioregional cues you find there, meaning like what the air currents and water flows and other animals and what plants do, that kind of thing. If you can afford going further out, I would definitely suggest maybe going for, it doesn't have to be like a strenuous hike, but like a walk that allows you to spend an overnight somewhere in the middle of forest, for example, because I think that spending the night sort of like replenishes you in a different way than going in and out the same day, and just be as aware as you possibly can to the rhythm that walking creates. And then if you can spend the night out, that would be amazing. Like walk in and then walk out. Not necessarily far, but just sleep over.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities and the Museum of Walking. In this episode, you've heard from Bibi Cardoraro. If you have any views on this interview or on any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.